Before we jump in, a warning that we are an explicit book podcast.
Yes, that means swearing, shitty jokes, and a whole lot of dark humour that some may take offence to.
Please check your trigger warnings on all of the books we cover.
You've been warned.
The episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
A book in a bed.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of A Book and a Bev. This week we are face to face with lies, deceit, and a whole lot of questions. The main question being, are you team manuscript or team letter? That's right, we're covering Verity by Colleen Hoover.
Oh my god.
Woo! I don't know that the content of this book deserves a whoop.
No.
The story's good. I enjoyed it. But it was like, oh my God. It
needs to be more
mellow.
It
was kind of like a whoo.
Yeah. That's right.
You've just got to choke it down like Verity tried to do with her child.
Don't.
Oh my God.
I thought you were going to say like she does with all of his semen because she literally tries to drown herself in it.
The semen, It's the small child choking, and then it's them choking Verity. Spoilers.
Look, if you're here, obviously, again, we are an explicit and full spoilers podcast. If you haven't read the book, why are you even here? I mean, we appreciate the support, but it's probably inappropriate in the circumstances.
Unless you want us to totally spoil the entire book for you and we're actually reading it to you like it's a bedtime story.
Oh God, this is a horrific fucking bedtime story.
Isn't it just?
Well, if you haven't figured out, we are your co-hosts, Bryony, Ellie, Georgia, and what are you guys drinking?
Okay, look, I needed a drink after this book. I think we as a collective need a drink after this book. It's cheap shit champagne because your girl's on a budget.
Well, I made a very last minute decision. My initial choice of drink was going to be, I don't know if many people have like the V8 vegetable juice available in their country, state, / territory. In V8 vegetable juice for obvious reasons.
No.
Well, I didn't actually get vegetable juice. I got lemon lime bitters, so.
I was not sure if I could stomach anything after this, but I'm just drinking my regular Jack. But I've mixed it up with vanilla Coke for no reason other than the fact that I was trying not to drink vegetable juice. We mean no disrespect to people who may have relatives and or friends and or loved ones who are currently in a vegetative state and also have people who are related to them who may have drowned or may have an allergy or may have choked on something because we're about to make so many jokes.
We don't mean any disrespect, but we're fucked.
Yeah. I make no apologies. Listen at your own discretion. You've been warned.
On that note, general vibes for the book.
Oh, holy fucking shit. This book was intense, but I did adore it. I quite enjoyed it. It was a pretty drastic change of pace from sucking off clowns, but this was also somehow just as unsettling, which is... unique. I didn't really vibe with Loan. She seemed like way too fucking naive for a 32-year-old. Like the whole time I thought she was 22. She just, stupid girl, hated her. And I'm also terrified of Crew, the 5-year-old.
Absolutely.
My main thoughts are all about Verity and her children. Oh my fucking God. I need to say I fully believe in the manuscript version. You cannot imagine, let alone write out in black and white, such fucking foul things happening to your own children at your hand. No way. She 100% did it. There's no room in my mind for doubt. Doesn't make Jeremy any less of a murderer because he still is completely fucked. But anyway, I will just preface this now. Postpartum psychosis is a legitimate thing that causes women to do some like pretty fucked up, unthinkable shit. So when you're pregnant, your brain is basically pickled in hormones and it can cause you to do some weird shit. Okay. Yeah. Knowing me, I did fall into a TikTok spiral about this one true crime case, which is easy for me to do given that 80% of my TikTok algorithm is true crime, the other 10% being at Taylor Swift era's concert tour and also New York City apartment tours randomly. That's okay. Anywho, this woman in America has recently been arrested for killing her children, and her defense is that she was suffering from postpartum psychosis, right? So when this story broke initially, there was a lot of commentary and support on social media about how postpartum psychosis is a real fucking thing. And then the prosecution laid out their opening argument and everyone was sort of like, oh, we may have been a bit too quick to jump to this woman's defense because there's a lot of shit like where it's like premeditated, but also postpartum psychosis is a real fucking thing. I just think the whole postpartum, prepartum, anxiety, depression, all of it is just completely fucked up in the medical system. Like, I kid you not, after you've had a baby, you get given a questionnaire, which is like circle from 1 to 4, how much you'll feel like you're going to kill yourself today. You might get one follow-up chat after that. Jesus. It's on you to like seek that help. That whole thing exists. People do some fucked up shit, and it can be because of these actual conditions that are completely unchecked in our society. But all that in mind, this book is a work of fiction, and we shall treat it as such because Verity is just plain old fucked up evil. But look, I just wanted to put that in the start. We know it exists. We've covered it. I am now going to continue to make jokes about dead children for the rest of this episode. So
absolutely. It's what we're here to do.
Yes.
And again, we also have fucked up sense of humor.
Yeah.
As you know, if this is not your first rodeo with us, you know that. If this is your first rodeo, you might be taken from the fact that we were making vegetable juice jokes.
Oh.
We have a particularly dark sense of humor.
We do.
Well, what in the veggie tales is this?
Fucking hell.
Well, this was completely unexpected and I was shook. This book was like a thriller movie. My imagination was the casting director, producer and cinematographer, and like, damn, I was terrified. I really scared me, honestly. And at the end of it, I generally don't know like which team I am on. I think it's team manuscript, but I'm honestly still like, you could tell me it's the other way and I'd also believe you. I think that Jeremy may have been neutral good with bad potential, and then reading that manuscript broke him and flipped him to the dark side. I do not get how Verity could have written this as a genuine attempt to get into like the headspace of a crazy person. If she was, I feel like she should have changed something, right? Like maybe she wouldn't have just used the same names and the same people and the same circumstances, not just reframe her entire life. Maybe she would have done something more, leaning more towards team manuscript, but there's still something unsettled in me that doesn't trust men. But that's just my natural disposition. So potato, potato. I will say I feel like I didn't like Loan as much as other female main characters of Colleen's. So I also don't know if that impacted the way I connect the story. I felt like everyone in this book was absolutely bonkers and could use a lot of therapy.
Yes. Literally. Where is therapy when you need it?
Not here.
No. Correct.
not here at all.
Not here at all. Even for crew. Oh, sorry. Even for fucking crew.
Yeah, honestly, like, this book is a testament to the failure of the American health system.
Pretty much.
In many ways, actually.
Yeah.
So this book makes me angry at times, yes, but in the best way possible. It makes you honestly question every single character's sanity along with your own. I love the way that Colleen has you like gripping the edge of your seat at every turn, leaving you wondering what's real, what's fake, who to believe and why. I've gone back and forth for a really long time about this book, and this is like my fifth time rereading it, and I've taken a few definite answers from these reads. So one, everyone in this damn book is borderline psychotic. Two, April, the doctors and everyone else are really shit at their job for not figuring out that Verity was faking it. You know what I mean? God. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, how does this happen? Like, how does this go unchecked?
Did no one put those sticky things on her head and checked her brainwaves at all?
Yeah, they're like, wow, the brainwaves are really brainwaving. Like,
yeah, they're really doing what they're supposed to be doing. And number three is that Crew is an absolute fucking cunt. He truly is an absolute arsehole of a fucking child. PTSD or not, he's a fucking prick. Like, he's
absolutely cooked. If you told me that Crew was actually like an Annabelle doll, like, yeah, or a Chucky, like, I'd be like, that makes complete sense.
Yeah, he literally is just like, at every turn, he's just there and he's just biting down on knives.
I kill turtles for fun.
And yeah, I kill turtles for fun. Like,
yeah, you know what turns people into serial killers? Killing animals.
Mm-hmm.
That's
we
it.
Also need
probably
to know.
Also having a mum who pretends to be comatose, and then my dad actually chokes her to death. And then he chokes another girl out on the beach, yeah, by just like holding her in the ocean
as I'm, yeah, walking away. And
oh,
also,
while my stepmom watches,
my two older sisters die, and now I hate my infant baby sister and left her outside to roast.
Yeah, just left, yeah, her outside on the grass.
Fuck it up.
Jesus. But for my team notion, I am team manuscript. I don't believe that any normal mother could write that about their children, their life. She wrote that letter to cover her own ass after she realized that Loan had found her manuscript. It just, it's all wacko to me. And Colleen has come out and said that she knows that Verity is evil. So this for me is just confirmation. However, I do agree that Jeremy is now the villain, but it's because of Verity's actions. Like, I feel like that has pushed him to that point. I also, just to add this, I also think that Loan's obsession with Verity is extremely unhealthy and it needs to fucking stop. She gives me the ick at every turn.
I really appreciate that all of our notes were like, crew, fucked. Lowen, fucked. Manuscript, yeah.
Verity, fucked.
Fucked. I also feel better about my like weird flip-floppiness because you're saying like originally you felt like that and then it's been like rereading it has made you feel more settled in your answers. So I feel like I just have to re-traumatize myself with rereading the book and then I'll feel better.
Obviously, this week we're doing the new formatting. Basically, each of the characters or main characters in the book, I came up with a little summary of each of them and I'd just like to read them to you.
Go on.
Oh no, I've just read your first one.
Yeah. Okay, Verity, starting off strong. Vegetable wife, New York bestseller, great actress, or is she psychotic? Or is she just a fucking weird cunt?
She saw that Taco ad where it was like, why can't you be both? Why can't you do both? And she was like...
She's applied that in, in every sense of the word. She's like, I can be a soft taco while I lay down and pretend to be soft in the head. And then I rise and become hard and crunchy.
Soft. She is a soft taco. She's mentally and physically. No, Jesus. Fuck me. Okay, going off strong then. We jump straight from that to Lowen. Writer, stepmummy, Snoop. One of those people who would hang upside down to force a semen into her womb just to one up a dead lady.
Oh my God. Oh my God, that freaked me the fuck out.
Terrifying.
You've known him for 2 weeks, wrong, Lowen. No. Lowen, it's been 2 weeks.
She's like, let me.
It's been 14 days.
And this also, you're going to make everything better.
You've seen the fate of his other children. They're all dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
All of them. Just dead. And then you've got the fucked up one. So then we go from that one to Jeremy. Daddy. Bad daddy or good daddy? Villain or victim? Or both or none? Are you confused yet? I am.
Oh my God. Yes. I would.
This is great.
I would fuck him. Look, I would.
I would. Yeah, I would.
I would not
give it a red hot crack.
Get pregnant to him. I mean, has no one heard of contraception in this fucking book?
No.
No.
But they have heard of coat hangers.
Anyway, moving on from that one. Corey, frat boy with glasses, Loki, dickhead, ask how Lowen's dead mum is.
Yeah, that sums him up, really.
It does.
Crew, tiny Jeremy, dickhead child, huge arsehole energy, definitely on the spectrum with a splice of PTSD.
Jesus.
It's true.
Yeah.
Last one, April, Verity's carer, sus of Lowen, sus of Jeremy, loves Verity and obviously is not great at her job because she couldn't know that Verity is a fucking liar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
April's got some issues.
And that's it.
Well, let's just jump straight in. Strap the fuck in because we are starting with a bang. Quite literally, some poor soul's head is just banging on the concrete after being splattered by a car. And this is how we meet our main character, covered in someone else's blood, and that's just a fucking ominous way to start a book.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. So, in the kerfuffle of this accident, our girl retreats and ends up running smack bang into our love interest, Jeremy.
Jeremy! Oh,
thank you.
Jeremy!
I was about to say someone needs to do it.
Jeremy!
Jeremy!
Oh my God.
Stefan! Buddy!
Look, Lowen's that fucked up. She probably would just start saying random names. So he is immediately concerned as this woman is just covered in blood spatter and she's not doing so well. He takes her to a coffee shop across the street to help her clean up. And he quite literally gives her the shirt off of his back. So we obviously find out that our main character's name is Lowen, which is fucking weird.
No offense to everyone called Lowen,
yeah,
but
sorry.
As someone with a cooked name, your name is cooked. Brian, I can say that.
I like Briny.
Anyway.
They begin trauma bonding by comparing why the splattered man situation isn't that bad to them.
Good.
Really?
I'm sure the splattered person is actually having the worst day here, guys, but sure, make it about yourself.
Yeah. Well, it does turn out that they've had a bit of a fucked up past. So Jeremy's pulled the body of his 8-year-old daughter out of lakes 5 months ago. Lowen has just lost her mother to cancer after being her carer for the last year. So they've got things in common. That's good. Turns out they both have meetings to get to, so they go to leave. Guess what? They're in the same meeting. What a brilliant coincidence. At this point, I would like to thank the splattered man for introducing these two star-crossed trauma-fucked souls. Thank you, kind sir.
Your death means something.
It does. We don't know your name. I shall name you John. Rest
Thanks,
in peace. What we learn is that Lowen is a struggling writer who used to date, or maybe just fuck, her editor, Corey. And Jeremy is the husband of Verity Crawford, the author who has written these crazy bestsellers in this suspense thriller series. And it turns out she too was splattered by a car or in a car and can no longer write her books because she is a vegetable. Her team wants Loan to finish the series for her. Loan is also strapped for cash because her mother was a lying, dying cunt and she's about to be evicted from her apartment.
What the actual fuck, mum? You cunt. Imagine on your deathbed being like, surprise, I've left you in debt.
Yeah.
Sucked
this
in.
This book is actually not good for mothers in any format.
No.
Like, there's not a single good mum.
No.
In the entire story.
There are none. Jeremy tells Loan that Verity was a messy bitch and he can't make sense of her office, so he just needs to have Loan come and stay with them at their house to sort through all of her notes. Again, at their house. I just want to preface that because it's fucking weird.
Wife's a vegetable, recently deceased daughter, come stay on a holiday vacay? It all tracks.
Well, Loan's nearly homeless at this point, so she's like, this is the perfect opportunity for me to get back on my feet. Thank you.
Look, I can't actually blame her for that.
I mean, look.
If you're about to be homeless, you've got no options.
True.
I'd be like, sure,
I've seen horror movies. I'll just put a salt circle around my bed and we'll be fine.
Crew would lick that salt circle and meant it would lay in.
Oh, no. Why would you put that image in my head, Taylor, if you're watching this jump scare?
The only voice of reason in this moment is Corey, so we should all be concerned. He points out that this dude is in a grief spiral after losing not one, but two daughters because they were twins and the first one died from an allergy and then the second one clearly didn't go to the VaxSwim program and is also deceased. And then obviously there's the wife.
Not VaxSwim.
The VaxSwim.
Had she have learned to starfish, she may still be here.
True. Ellie's one up to you, you dead child.
Yeah. Fuck you, Harper, whatever her name was. So Corey's just out here spitting facts. We didn't expect it from him. I think we expected nothing because he literally forgot that Loan's mother had cancer to begin with and then didn't even really ask her anything until he rocked up to her apartment and was like, where's your mum? Loan is basically like YOLO and compares this situation to dating an ex-boyfriend named Amos who liked being choked. Essentially, nothing in this world could have been worse to Loan than marrying Amos. So she's fine with any and all situations because of she could be married to Amos and that's just, it's worse. So then Loan embarks on her journey to Vermont to stay with Jeremy and start the research process. So she listens to Verity's first book on the way, which kind of seems a tad unprepared if you ask me, but this gal just seems to not really think things through that well. That's just kind of how she rolls. So she pulls up to the house and this can only be described as looking haunted as fuck, which, as I'm sure Bryony does agree with me here, means the house has character and we adore it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What? I'm the one that always wants to go to the haunted places.
I know.
You're forgetting. I want a house that I can paint all black and give it like a black picket fence because I want children to look at my house and say, oh, the witch lives there.
Yeah, and then there will actually be a demon appearing and then you'll die.
Yeah, Crew's just living in your basement.
Licking the salt.
Next to his dead turtle.
She is immediately greeted by a small child appearing like a poltergeist at her car window, staring at her and not speaking. Fucking fantastic. Rather than backhanding the little weirdo, she attempts to speak to him. She eventually gets the tour from Jeremy, who comes to let her inside the house. And here we discover Verity is still in the house. She's got this full-on hospital room set up. I think I identify a little bit with Verity in this book, and it's quite concerning to me. She is like me, and we choose to be vegetables in this moment. We like to live the soft taco life until someone comes around and puts some little jalapeno mayonnaise on us and spices us up a little bit. So this is where we are.
The soft taco life.
What kind of spice jalapeno mix are you getting put on you?
I don't know, but
you're
delicious.
A soft taco.
It's delicious. You need to try it. But yes, anyway, so the long and short of that was that A, the house looks haunted. B, there's a creepy ass child. C, his mother is essentially a vegetable living above you while you sleep in her room. And D, this is the room that she shared with Jeremy and the headboard as her teeth marks.
That's like walking into someone's bedroom and they have handcuffs on each corner of their bed. You know what I mean? Like, that is a very clear statement of we fuck here. Yeah. We fuck. You know what I mean? Like, just... people would walk in and be like, yikes, all right, fair. You're confident, all right? Seek the confidence. Let's go.
Yeah.
But there's a whole, your daughters are dead, your wife is in an accident, I'm coming to stay here to take over her career.
No.
You've got your PTSD child. Like, what is going on?
All of these signs point to get the fuck away. No. But you know what Loan thinks to herself? She could have married Amos, so this is a pretty sweet situation.
Jesus Christ.
So Jeremy thinks that Loan should have an alias that she can use for her books, and he uses the good old reliable what's your porn star name trick. So in this moment, I would like us all to identify our porn star name. So I think that's the street you were born on and your first pet.
Zenith Stormy.
I like Zenith Stormy. No, that's good.
I sound fancy. You sound like an expensive escort for presidents.
Mattison Luca.
Mattison Luca. Yeah, that's a Mattison. Mattison.
Mattison Luca, like, or Mattison Lex. Like, it's like Luca was when I was a teeny tiny tiny little bear, like a little infant. And then when I was like 9 months, he died and we got Lex not that long after. So I think Luca.
Ooh. I'm Magnolia Sam.
Oh my God, that is a hooker name.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fucking hooker name.
Sorry to everyone called Magnolia, but you're a whore.
Love enough all of those names for us. That's great.
I think we're a very high-end escort group.
Yeah, like Mattison Luca.
Zenith Stormy.
Oh, God, that is so high-end.
Stripper names. Right, so we'll leave you with those. And now we're back with Loan, and she's making her way to Verity's study, and she spends maybe all of like 5 minutes looking around until she finds what is clearly a piece of work completely irrelevant to the series that she's meant to be writing, but is way too interesting not to read. It turns out it's Verity's autobiography called So
I'm Stressed.
Be It. Yeah, look, I'm sure we all would read that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just sat there. I'm the queen of procrastination. I'm like, oh, something new, I'm going to pick it up.
I know, and I'm the queen of like,
oh yeah,
other people's drama.
Absolutely.
Let me read all about your life.
Yeah.
And judge it. So that's exactly what she does. And it starts off with how Verity and Jeremy met, and it's actually kind of cute. Verity's just attending some fancy event to try and fuck rich guys whilst wearing this like red dress, which she describes as fuckable. She meets Jeremy. Turns out that they have both lied their way into this event, and they end up in a stolen limo and basically became inseparable from that point forward. They essentially started living together almost immediately, which in my opinion is a red flag. And yes, I do have friends who are currently in those relationships.
Yeah, there's the lesbian joke that you go on a first date and then you just never leave.
Yeah.
So shout out to those people. We don't mean never you leave. Are the red flag. It's just everyone else.
Essentially, that's what Verity does. She breaks the lease on her apartment, doesn't tell him, and just kind of starts living with him. And then the night he's like, do you want to move in?
Funny
with
me? About that.
Like,
surprise.
And he doesn't really take that too well. So to get her out of that argument, she sits
on the shut him up. Yeah. That will do the job.
That will. Not very long after that, they end up getting engaged. And it turns out that that night that they got engaged was the same night that they conceived the twins, which, same for me. PSA to all of our listeners, use protection when you get engaged.
If you are having celebratory sex, use more contraception than you normally plan on.
Yes.
Thankfully, that is kind of where the similarities between me and Verity. And I do recall like one specific time where Rosie as a baby just would not stop crying. Never once did it cross my mind to stick my fingers
I down honestly I thought that was going elsewhere. And I was like, Ellie, are you sure you want to say this right now? Are you sure you want to keep going?
Did she try and kill her children? No. Whenever I was in a moment of like pure parental overwhelm, I would just take the kids, I'd put them in the front room, give them a heap of crappy snacks that I knew they'd eat, and I'd just watch my TV. And I'd be like, you guys can parent yourselves for 20 minutes while mum watches McDreamy. And then by then I'd calmed my brain, and then we were good to reset and go again. And now they know a lot about neurosurgery. So
we're
all winners. So from there, the book flips between current time and Verity's manuscript. And as the story progresses, weird things just start happening. Like Loan being in Verity's office doing some work, she'll look up outside to the window and, you know, Verity's out there in her wheelchair with her nurse. Verity's just staring at her. Fucking creepy. Again, at this moment, leave.
Again, Lowen? It is like Lowen has never seen a horror movie or a scary TV show. Not even one. She hasn't even seen the trailer for one.
Let me remind you, she is 32.
He does not have excuses.
32. She does not. So even fucking creepier than that, there's this moment when she, Jeremy, and Crew are all outside and she notices Crew waving towards her. And as she goes to wave back, she realizes, no, it's not her that he's looking at. It's above her. And she turns to look to see what's above her, and it's Verity's bedroom. And as she's looking at the window, the curtain's moving back in position as if someone had just been standing
there. Run, bitch, run.
As Brandy said, this bitch has never seen any horror movie ever because she turns in to that dumb fucking white girl from every horror movie ever goes to investigate.
That's when you say, actually, Jeremy, as hot as I think you are, that's not a vibe, so I'm out of here.
See, I'm curious enough that I'd probably go grab the child, who obviously is best friends with whatever it is, bring it up with me and use it as a shield.
But that child's possessed. I'm not going near it.
I would be like leaving, and so then I'm in the house packing my stuff and I'm talking to the haunted house and I'll be like, look, I'm just getting the fuck out your hair. You do you. Like, you're doing great. I wish nothing but the best for you.
I can imagine you being so overbearingly nice. George is just trying to figure out what's going on and investigating it. I'm burning it down.
Ellie's like, it cannot be saved. Bye.
Look, we would do great on the Supernatural TV show.
The three of us as a team. I feel like one's like,
they send me in first.
Yeah, they're like, sweet in the deal.
Oh my god. Yeah. Bryony goes in first. Georgia comes in to try and work out what's going on, and then I just come in to kill everyone.
And he's like, I'm the last resort. Nothing is working. We're setting it on fire.
And we're like, actually, it is working. Like, the ghost is really nice. Yeah. Georgia's made some friends, and you're like, nope, too late.
Too late.
Nope. Oh, God. Well, she does go to investigate. She's a Georgia in this scenario. So she's up in the room. She's looking around. She realizes the TV's not on, which she thinks is a bit odd because April, the nurse, told her that she left the TV.
But we know that we can't trust April because she's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, she's a dumb bitch. She's definitely not a good representation of our incredible healthcare workers. That's for sure.
No. Look, the poor love's probably been traumatized from the COVID era. She's just looking forward to put her feet up, really. Yeah. So here we are. Apparently that still isn't enough for Lowen to leave. And she just convinces herself that she's going crazy. And, well, that Jeremy's just a nice piece of eye candy. So she's willing to put up with the demon spawn and its psychotic mother.
Weird vibes.
So good. Lowen's idea of recovering from the trauma of living in this haunted house is to read more of Verity's manuscript, which, again, stupid. If you're that fucking freaked out, do you think you're going to curl up in bed at night and then read the same story you're getting terrified from? So we're at the part of the story where Verity is newly pregnant and she's just not really handling things that great, which I do relate to because I did refer to my unborn fetus in those first few months as a parasite. Literally does suck the life from you.
Not that I can relate, but you know, it seems fair.
So Verity isn't really on the same wavelength, you know, with early pregnancy as most people. She's literally competing with her unborn children for the attention of their father.
That is fucked up.
And now that's fucked up. All she wants to do is suck
also
his dick.
Not relatable.
And that is also fucked up. There's references to her choking on it at some point.
Yeah,
like choking on his cum. Not just the dick, but the semen.
Ew.
Like a slurpee of cum. Yuck. So she's taking pills and drinking as much as she can in secret to try and yeet the fetuses, but it's not working. It would seem her breaking point, though, is Jeremy telling her that he would love their children unconditionally.
That'll do
That's
it.
That's just center over.
She can never listen to that Katy Perry song unconditionally now, because every time it comes on, she's like, I hate my children.
Jesus.
Yeah. Look, she takes things into her own hands, quite literally. She grabs a wire coat hanger and attempts a good old-fashioned self-abortion. And I'd like to read you a quote here. I wanted to be in bed with him when it happened. I wanted to wake him up frantic and show him the blood. I wanted him to panic, to worry, to feel bad for me, to cry for me.
That is on no way, shape, form, human capacity, realm, universe, none of it, never going to be okay.
Issues.
And as everyone who has listened to our episodes is aware, we are a very pro-choice podcast.
Yeah.
We're very, very pro-choice. Not that
choice.
Just
try to do it yourself. No, not to get into the healthcare of America at this present point in time, because some women don't have options. All we're saying is that don't do it for attention.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes.
To love you more. But essentially, her attempt fails because it turns out she's pretty shit at trying to abort her children. She just ends up giving one of the twins like a really nasty scar. So when they're born, she's like, I guess the scarred one will have the better name. Chasten. I'm sorry. That's the better name?
Like, just in there. She's just in there and missing her hanger. Just hanging in there.
Just hanging in there.
Look, if you're going fuck anything up, let it be trying to abort your own children. If you're in there with bad intentions, aka just because your husband is like, yeah, I love these kids.
Yeah, you know? I love these children unconditionally and provide them with a stable household.
Or like maybe the realization of having children's dawning on her, she's realizing she's not ready for the commitment. Go to your doctor.
Seek medical
It's confidential.
Help.
Don't look at that coat hanger that your like work shirt's on and go, what if I got to know
I
you
really
better?
I really don't want to return to work. I know.
Anyway, she does have the children by C-section. And she does this so Jeremy's temple between my legs remains intact.
Ick.
But she refuses to breastfeed because her boobs are only his to suck on. Most of the time when you hear stories of people like testing someone's breast milk, it's because they've squirted
they put
like,
it in
an
external thing and they've sipped.
Yes.
They don't go you straight don't to the source. From like, their I want farm to table ready.
Oh my God. So look, I'm traumatized. Thank God I finished my breastfeeding journey because I don't think I'd be going back to it now. Anyway, he's in love with the baby. She's in love with him. So therefore, she must also pretend to love the babies, which she does not.
So Lowen is basically pissed over the manuscript. And I mean, it's making all of us angry. But like, she stops reading it and then she'll just be like, what the fuck did I just read? She'll be bent over because she's in physical pain because it's making her so traumatized. But, you know, she keeps reading it. She's worried also she won't have kids. But if she does have them, she would want a partner like Jeremy. Of course you fucking would. She ends up going through boxes of photos and is thinking about Chasten's scar. And then we also learn that Harper was diagnosed with Asperger's. And so that's one of the reasons that this child in particular didn't show a lot of emotion in all of the photos. Jeremy doesn't really like to look at the photos of Verity, interesting enough. But Lowen is like, wow, Verity could def fake how much she loved these kids. Like, it's amazing acting in these photos. She just looks so happy with the children. Which, again, is it true? Is it not? We don't know. Jeremy was closer with Harper than Verity was. And we also learned that Crewe, being the fucking psychopath that he is, doesn't even ask about his sisters or even say their names. Like, they're just gone. Like that turtle he killed. Jeremy admits that he thinks Verity had run her car into the tree on purpose. And, like, this is a big moment for Jeremy. He's never said those words out loud, and so Lowen hugs him and they hold each other, and they're holding each other for like too long, but they're not letting go, and then they nearly kiss, but then like the possessed demon that is Crewe appears to cockblock, and Crewe freaks the fuck out over like the pictures, and Jeremy has to carry him away, and Lauren's like, oh my God, I just wanted to make out with your father, Crewe. What the fuck?
The fuck, Crewe? Why are you such a cockblock?
Seriously. Crewe was having one of those like demonic things when they can't see like an image of themselves because it like turns them crazy.
Yeah. So Lowen is getting unsettled by the energy in this house, which also same girl, but she thinks that she is hearing someone sneak about the house at night. Again, why are you still there? Crewe takes Lowen to basically look at a turtle he found, and this is when the demon child says that he killed the last one. But we really quickly skip over the dead turtle.
Yeah, oh my God, it's Aelin and Rowan all over again on the beach.
Oh my God.
Oh,
he's like, oh my God, I was just at this beach and there were all these dead turtles.
Lisa's came from passion. His is just one of the red flags. He's going to be a serial killer.
So after the whole dead turtle incident, Crewe demands to be taken out to dinner because he is sick of not going out and enjoying his life, even though his sisters just died. And so they just do that. They're like, absolutely, that makes complete sense, small child. And afterwards, the dinner felt like a date, even though, again, there was a small child. Jeremy goes to like look after Crewe before anything can happen though. And so Lowen basically decides, you know what? I'm going to read the manuscript to try and find some material for the wank bank, because that seems completely fair. So turns out the material is obviously not wankable, and instead it's quite horrifying because Verity starts talking about how she would just leave the girls in the bedroom to cry so that she could sleep in.
Oh my God.
She'd wake up and act like a good mum while Jeremy was leaving for work. And once he was gone, she'd just put in headphones and go back to bed and let them cry it out.
And like fucking not hell. For and 20 then minutes. It's like for no. 5 hours.
And then they'd be so tired by like the end of the day that he'd come home and she'd be caring for them. So then they'd be happy and he'd be like, oh my God, you're doing so amazingly. And it's like, actually, she's really not.
I will say though, when I was in the early days of like first child, newborn, it's a struggle. You know, it's really hard. I can't imagine two of them. That's fucked. But I remember my mother saying, just remember, drug dealers have children. So if the druggies can do it, you can do it.
You're already better. So in this part of the manuscript, Jeremy is basically waiting for the doctor to give the all clear before they have sex again, which in a shocking twist of events, the man is wanting to wait. And Verity is like, nah.
Yeah, so we don't believe that.
She's like, skewer me like a kebab.
Literally. So we get this quote. It was as if my tongue had driven him to a point of madness because he was pounding into me so hard it actually did hurt. It lasted almost an hour and a half because as soon as he finished, I sucked him off until he was hard again. Both times we fucked, we never said a word. And even after it was all over and I was crushed beneath the weight of his exhausted body, we still didn't speak. He rolled off me and wrapped himself around me. Our sheets were covered in sweat and semen, but we were too consumed with sleep to care.
No, no,
no. There's so much in that one quote that's just
an
no.
hour and a half.
Why would you ever put yourself through that?
Just so much rigorous
this
activity.
This is one of the reasons I think the manuscript is fake. Because just no woman I've ever met would ever have done that.
Because if they've had sex and it hurts, then she's probably bleeding, right? So then if he's
done
and she's bled on him and then she sucks him off.
She's like a vampire. God, she's a vampire! It's Twilight!
She's a vampire!
The only plausible explanation for that.
Absolutely. Mm. So it is at this moment where Lowen goes, wow, these vibes are super cooked and no one can willingly have sex for that long and then be covered in sweat and semen and be like, great night's sleep. So Verity must be a psychopath.
Night-night.
Night-night. And that night, Lowen puts on one of Jeremy's shirts and then stares at the bite marks on the bedhead. And you're like, Lowen, no. Lowen, stay. Get down. And Lowen's like, yes, I'm going to do it. So the quote we get is, I crawl onto the bed and lift up onto my knees as I face the headboard. I straddle a pillow and imagine being in this position sprawled over Jeremy's face as I grip the headboard. I close my eyes and slide a hand up into Jeremy's t-shirt, imagining its hands that drag up my stomach and caresses my breasts. So she's about to get off to the thought of Jeremy while staring at the bite marks of his vegetable wife. And then she hears Verity's bed, like the gears making the noise as it moves. She's like, actually, the aesthetics are off. I can't get off right now.
Vibes are a bit iffy.
Now she thinks that as she's about to bite down on the same bite marks.
But it gets worse. It gets worse. So she goes to bed. She's like, well, you know, like half-baked wank session is better than none, so we'll take it. And she goes to bed. But then she sleepwalks into Verity's bedroom and is in bed with Verity and wakes up to be staring Verity in the face. Hello,
Bobby!
She's
straddling Verity's head and is biting on Verity's headboard.
Oh, no.
I really do need someone to paint me the picture of how this worked out. Were they spooning?
I want it to be face to face.
I picture Verity's in the bed, like facing upwards, eyes open, and Lowen is curled up next to her like this. And then she opens her eyes. And, like, the faces are this far apart.
The best bit about this to me is because obviously we know, as people who have read the book, that Verity is faking it. So Verity is probably just like, what the fuck is this bitch doing? Look at her.
Shocking twist of events. Lowen's actually interested in Verity.
Yeah. So obviously she panics. You know, she's just woken up in bed with Verity. And again, she's not in love with her, but there's room for potential. So she runs out of the room screaming. And Jeremy finds her as she is running away and ends up like comforting her. And he's like, oh my God, is this why you wanted a lock on the bedroom door? And she is like, yeah, that is actually why. Because turns out I have a history of sleepwalking and it's a bit cooked.
If someone was like,
I'm going to need a bedroom lock because I do sleepwalk, I'd be like, thanks for the honesty, but it's also super creepy.
But imagine if they didn't say anything and then woke up next to your vegetable wife. That's brilliant.
Lauren is like, I should tell you about that time that I slept walk as a child and walked and yeeted myself off of a porch railing.
Fucked.
Yeah, and then Lauren's mum was scared of her, kind of fair, and was like, I'm going to lock my bedroom door so you can't get in and you're on your own.
Good luck.
Godspeed. Basically, Jeremy climbs back into bed with her until she falls back asleep. And when he thinks that she is asleep, but she's not, he kisses her on the head. The next day, Jeremy is like, here's a crazy idea. What if I lock your bedroom door from the outside? And she's like, that seems super fine to me and doesn't raise any concerns there. Again, she has not seen a single horror movie. Lauren dives back into work to distract herself, but like April is giving her some serious side eye. And honestly, April, shut the fuck up. You can't talk at this stage.
Yeah, fuck off, April.
Fuck off, April.
April has zero credibility at all.
Absolutely none. You can't throw stones right now, April. So Lauren ends up reading another part of the manuscript, and it's when Verity basically has a nightmare that Harper is going to kill Chasten. So that's fun. And Jeremy is like, wow, that seems like a super intense nightmare. Let's talk about it. And Verity is like, nah, let's give you a gobby instead. So as she's giving him the gobby, she's like, how many people have given you gobbies before? And they're like talking about their past lovers. And then we get this quote. It's odd how that didn't make me jealous, but two infants could leave me seething. Maybe it was because the girls were currently in his life, but all of his past whores were just that. In the past. On a side note, Ellie could not relate to this sentiment.
No.
So as he's about to finish, you know, things are getting great for her, apparently. The girls start crying. And so he obviously goes, this is not a great soundtrack to get off to, the crying, wailing of my infant children. So I'm going to stop. And she's like, no, it's actually the perfect soundtrack. This is a quote we get, which again, is kind of weirdly realistic in part. Let me explain. The quote we get is, I'd gotten so much better at swallowing compared to the first time I attempted it. I could feel him ready to come, so I pretended I was gagging. I don't know why, but that always set him off, thinking I was choking on his cock. Men.
Men.
Verity is actually, like, excited to care for Chasten after this gobby. So she gets up, she's like, yay, Chasten! But it's Harper crying. And she stares at Harper and is like, well, I did just have that really fucked up nightmare where you killed your sister, so maybe I should just preempt it by killing you. And this is where she starts to do a little finger dingle doodling and tries to choke Harper.
God.
Yeah. But then Jeremy appears. Like, she thinks that he didn't see her, but the baby monitor was on and it's a close call and makes her think about what Jeremy would do to her to protect the girls.
Oh my God.
I just picture, like, Jeremy. He's just, like, walking in, and his wife's just, like, four fingers deep in their daughter's throat.
My brain goes, as you're saying what you're thinking, I've just imagined she's trying to cover for it. And she's gone, you know when your dog eats something? And you're like, what's in your mouth?
What's in your mouth, you naughty girl? I thought you were going to say she's just, like, gone reverse. Oh, she's a puppet.
None of this is good. None of this is good.
I know.
But it's also really good. So one day, Lauren has been working on her fucking book for 12 hours. When Jeremy gets her to take a break, they lie in the grass and watch a meteor shower. And they talk about growing up and their plans for the future. And we learn that Verity's parents cut her off, as they thought she was essentially the devil. And when Jeremy told them what had happened to Verity, her dad said that God punishes the wicked. Your daughter has been in a car crash, and he's like, well, she had it coming. Jeremy decides this is the moment to say that he's never read more than Verity's first book because it was so hard for him to fathom such horrific content coming from her imagination. Which, yeah,
if
Jeremy,
you knew.
Exactly.
I also think that it's probably a good time now to chuck in how Verity's main characters are the villains, and she says that she bases the main character off of Jeremy. So it's just an interesting little tidbit. And this is why Colleen Hoover is so good at her books, because she keeps you wondering.
Guessing all the
time. She just throws you off.
So Jeremy and Lauren have another almost kiss moment, but it ends with them laughing at the thought of him locking her in her room for the night. Good.
Yikes.
As he goes to shut the door, he ends up telling her that Verity had never actually read her books. So Verity wasn't the one who was a big fan of her, but it was actually Jeremy. Jeremy was a big fan of her. And so now she feels like professional validation from him as well, which makes her love him more. Back in the manuscript, we learn about the only time Jeremy ever threw something against a wall like every other white man, and it was dumplings. He threw dumplings against the wall, which that's not okay. Dumplings didn't do anything to you, and they probably were really tasty. So Jeremy had gotten angry that Verity only ever talks to Chasten. Like, she never talks about Harper. And Verity spins it, and he's like, oh, it's just we communicate differently. And they end up discussing Harper possibly having Asperger's. And she ends up saying that they're expecting another child, even though she isn't pregnant, because she knows that he loved her the most when she was pregnant. And so then we get another horrifying description of her physical upkeep and the way she prides herself on what she looks like. Quote one, he fucked me slowly, kissing me the whole time, taking turns with each nipple as he sucked them. Had I breastfed, would he be enjoying my breasts as much? I doubted it. Quote two, I want to taste you, he said, moving down my body until his tongue was spreading me apart. Of course you want to taste me, I thought. I kept things intact for you down there. You're welcome. Quote three, there was a small part of me that was concerned about faking the pregnancy, but I knew I had options if I didn't get pregnant that week. Miscarriages were just as easy to fake as pregnancies.
Fucking hell.
This bitch.
Just when you think it can't get worse, it gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
So while we're all being horrified by Verity's manuscript, Loewen is actually finding Verity's manuscript very repetitive, which is saying a lot in itself, Loewen. Go to therapy.
Yeah, she like says that she finds it like boring at times.
Yeah.
This is where the letter and the manuscript thing comes in again, because it's like, if you were making up this manuscript, like if you were making a story that was mixed with a little bit of truth, with a little bit of lie, would you not make it interesting? You know what I mean? Mm. Would you not keep people in, you know? So that's just another reason why I feel like I'm team manuscript, because like I feel like the manuscript has to be true.
Yeah.
But basically, at this stage, Loewen finishes the outline for the first book that she is meant to write. Because remember, again, she's got a job to do.
I forgot about that.
And once the pay hits her account, it should be her time to leave. It should be. Emphasis on the should. Jeremy doesn't think that she has stayed long enough, though. Loewen feels like Jeremy is trying to keep his marriage vows to Verity, but at like a huge personal cost to himself. And it's definitely not at all related to the fact that Loewen wants to fuck the absolute shit out of Jeremy. It's all selfish.
Yeah, it's also just like, mind your own fucking business, Loewen.
Pure motivations. I don't know what you're talking about.
Hasn't it also just been like a week?
We get a quote, which again, it's just Loewen giving me the ick, essentially. He stares at my driver's license a moment longer. When he runs his thumb over my picture, I get actual chills. He didn't even touch me. He touched my fucking driver's license and it turned me on. I am pathetic. Yeah, you are.
Yes.
Facts. Jeremy then realizes obviously it's her birthday, so he bakes her a birthday cake and does the whole like I wipe the cake off your chin thing, and then they kiss and things are like kicking off and they're basically dry humping half naked on the couch. But then I lift my head to watch him, but my blood runs cold when my eyes are pulled to the figure standing at the top of the stairs. She's just standing there watching her husband as his mouth roams over my breast. My entire body stiffens beneath Jeremy. Verity's fists clench at her sides before she rushes back in the direction of her room. No. No.
Abso-fucking-lutely not, cunt.
Get fucked. Absolutely not.
For sure. He's literally just looked up, tit in mouth, sees
what's
wife.
Up? It's just, it's so much. But Loewen is like, get the fuck off me, Jeremy, because Verity is up and she is mobile. And he doesn't believe her at first, but she is like, I saw her. I am not lying. But when they go and check, Verity's tucked into bed, snoozing away. And Jeremy, weirdly in this moment, isn't angry at her and like chalks it up to being like a bit of work burnout and guilt for what happened between them, and ends up curling up in bed with her. Again, he's like, this is a completely rational reaction and I should definitely spend more time with you.
And Loewen goes, even though this just happened, yeah, this is a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we all have to sleep sometime, and so she could wake up and kill me, but this seems ideal. Loewen asks if Verity could be faking her injuries, and Jeremy is like, nah, she wouldn't do something like that. She's not that type of person. And Loewen is like, well, I'm reading a manuscript that is definitely giving me the vibes that she is that person. So we're going to have conflicting opinions on that one. Jeremy gets another lock for Verity's door so that Loan can feel comforted, but it doesn't really do the trick. Again, it's the vibes. Loan basically at this stage is wanting Jeremy to realize who his wife is, but she hasn't worked up the nerve to give him the manuscript, and she wants to know how it ends before she does that, which is a fair point, because imagine if at the end she's like a whole big exposition, it's the letter at the end being like, FYI, all of this was a fake, and she's like, oh gosh, silly sausage.
See, that would make more fucking sense. If it was not real, then she would have like a little bit at the end being like, if anyone finds this, just as an FYI, this is an exercise. It's not actually real. Lol, tee hee, ha ha. Joke's on you. Where's Ashton Kutcher?
It took me a minute to remember where Ashton fits into this, and then...
Anyways, leaving Ashton Kutcher behind, back in the manuscript, we learn when Crew was born, they, like, found this rhythm, but then Chasten dies. The girls were at a sleepover, and, like, she had a nut allergy. And, like, the kids' parents, where they were at the sleepover, like, everyone knew about the allergy. They were prepared. But during the night, the kids snuck into the pantry and got out new snacks, and they had nuts in them, and so she just never woke up. And we get these quotes as they're finding out about this. Quote one, Jeremy went through a period of denial, but he never questioned that Chasten unknowingly ate the nuts. But I did. I knew. Every time I looked at Harper, I could see her guilt. I had been waiting on this to happen for years. Years. I knew from when they were 6 months old that Harper would find a way to kill her. And what a perfect murder she committed. Even her own father would never suspect her. Her mother, though, I was a little harder to convince.
Oh my God.
Verity, you're sounding a little bit cooked right now. Just FYI.
Just a little bit.
You don't write shit like that. I'm sorry. And then, like, your daughter's just died and you're framing the murder on your
other child. But it gets worse. I miss Chasten, obviously, and I was saddened by her death, but there was something unpleasant in how hard Jeremy took it. He was devastated, numb. And
perhaps, like, he's an actual parent.
Yeah. And, like, other very common things with grief, their sex life basically dies with it. But apparently, that's all one-sided and all in Jeremy because Verity still wants to fuck. And again, just when you think you can't get worse, she's like, hold my drink. Part of me felt responsible. Had I just tried choking her again as an infant, or leaving an open bottle of bleach near her as a toddler, or ramming the passenger side of my car into a tree while she was unbuckled with the airbag turned off, all of it could have been avoided. So many potential accidents I could have staged, should have staged. Had I stopped Harper before she acted, we would still have Chasten, and then maybe Jeremy wouldn't be so fucking sad all the time.
Oh my God.
Like, she's a fucking psychotic cunt.
It's literally so horrific to me that I don't have the words.
I know a lot of mums, like me, they go on these TikTok spirals because I didn't have anxiety until I had my kids. And now I have such fucking anxiety when it comes to their health. Like, it is insane. And you see, like, it appears in your algorithm, all of these families with children that are dying tragically. And then it's just you hyperfixate on all of the ways your children can be taken from you, and it is fucking horrendous. Thank God we live in Australia and I don't have to worry about gun violence, because I can't even imagine how I'd cope with that. So you already have all of these thoughts in your head about all of the terrible ways your children could be taken from you, and hypothetically the shell of a person you would become if you ever did lose a child. And hypothetically, manuscript's not real. The fact that she was able to put herself in the mindset of trying to kill one of her own children is just unfathomable. That's why I am 110% this is her.
Like, and again, like,
she had to do this.
You can look at me like, well, Colleen wrote the book and Colleen is a mother. But again, it's not Colleen writing about her children. Mm-mm. Like, it's her real life lived experience. It's Colleen wrote a story about this character that for this reason is doing this. If Verity is writing a story to get in that mind space, why wouldn't you have fake names? Even if you were drawing from like what ifs of real life things, using it name for name, timelines the same. Like, it's too much for me. It's too much to be fake.
For sure.
So Loan finishes reading that and finds Verity in the lounge room. And Loan just starts like throwing things at her to test her reactions. Loan is now like 80% sure that she is faking the injuries. And at one stage she's like cooking dinner and realizes that the TV is no longer playing and there's no one else downstairs but Verity. So she gets in Verity's face and is calling her a cunt. And is like, I'm going to go and I'm going to fuck your husband in your bed. And you're going to listen. Like, that type of thing. And Verity promptly accidentally wets herself.
That's such an odd reaction. Like, given everything we know about Verity to this point, for her to piss herself in that situation.
But also for her to be like, because we know she's faking it. So if Verity, who's faking it, has gone, what is a good reaction in this moment? Well, I haven't gone to the toilet in a while.
It's like she does that on one hand because then she knows Jeremy will come to get her and she gets time with Jeremy because he has to clean her up because he's a carer. So that's like the manuscript side. But then the letter side of things is that she's put herself in this position to buy herself some time to get out of this situation with unscathed as possible. And now she's got this crazy woman in her house calling her a cunt and telling her she's going to fuck her husband.
Anyways, so after Crew has gone to bed, Jeremy and Lowen talk and Lowen is like, I feel bad for you, bro. Go put her in a home and live, laugh, love, my dude. Like, just go for gold. And so then they take two at sex and lock themselves in the bedroom. But wait, we get this moment where he says, I don't have a condom. She says, I'm not on the pill. He starts sucking on her nipples and says, I'll pull out. And she says, all right.
Famous last words.
Lowen, no!
32 years old, ladies and gentlemen.
The pull-out method is not strong. It is not reliable. We do not recommend. Especially not if you are fucking a married man in the bedroom of his vegetable wife after she's wet herself. It's just not.
No.
And while the demon child is still in the house as well.
Yeah. Crew's in the cupboard. He's watching. He sees all.
Jesus Christ. Jeremy goes, oh my God, I love the Ariana Grande song called Positions. And they begin to demonstrate the entire Kama Sutra and just like, she's basically a bopper and he's like, flip it, twist it, smack it.
Oh my God.
But then again, just when you think this is already cooked, Lowen's like, hold my fucking drink. I have an idea. And the quote we get is, I open my eyes, my mouth inches away from the headboard, inches away from the bite marks Verity left behind from all the times he had her in this same position. When Jeremy's fingers slide down my stomach and accompany his mouth, I have nowhere for my screams to go. With the position he has me in, I'm compelled to lean forward and stifle with the sounds of my climax. I bite down on the wood in front of me. I can feel Verity's teeth marks beneath mine, different, unaligned with my own. I bite harder into the wood as I come, determined to leave deeper marks than she ever did.
No.
What the
fuck?
No, absolutely not.
It's so cooked.
Who screams that much?
Look, part of me wants to be like, look, as a woman, I'm proud that you can sound out the sounds of your pleasure, because we know that women have historically been taught to either not make noise or only make noise that they think men will like. So I'm happy for that, but also there's a lot of screaming.
All right, so the ending of the book. Jeremy and our girl are fucking continuously, basically, like rabbits. Verity is up to her shenanigans again. She's locking doors, being all around fucking super iffy. We read more of the manuscript. Verity drowns Harper in the lake by taking her out on a canoe and tipping it over with Crew in it too. So she's like, I'll just risk it for the biscuit and also take my other child too.
No wonder why he's so fucked up.
It's an extremely traumatic scene, but we don't actually want to deep dive into any more dead babies than we already have, because this shit is fucked.
To be fair, Verity... Harper's already doing a lot of the deep diving.
Oh my God!
I mean, you're not wrong! You are not wrong! Verity is thinking that all would be fine and dandy because Jeremy would just, you know, get over it, right? Totally. But obviously, Jeremy is sus as fuck of the crazy bitch Verity, because she clearly hated her own daughter and Jeremy picked up on those vibes. Verity decides enough is enough. She's going to drive herself into a tree, which unfortunately for us is months too late, and she doesn't do a good enough job.
She does not get a participation ribbon.
So Lowen and Jeremy are fucking some more. She decides not to tell him about the manuscript because he's putting Verity part-time into a home. He ends up coming in Lowen, and she puts a pillow under her hips so it all seeps down into her womb, because that's what would make this situation better. More children to be killed. Sick.
Again, I have no words. Can I just say, it's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
So we move on from that weirdly child-filled situation. Crew bites down on a knife, like the little psycho that he is, and our girl gets stuck at home with Verity while Jeremy takes Crew to the hospital because obviously he's just bitten down a fucking knife like a stupid fucking psycho. She freaks the fuck out and she puts the baby monitor in Verity's room and like runs away and like locks her in the room and then goes down into the office and reads the manuscript because she's like, I'm fucking watching you, you cunt.
After everything she's been through, everything, wouldn't you just be like, no, I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm sorry. Your car is literally outside. Just go down to a cafe for 25 minutes. For fuck's sake, Lowen.
Yeah, but anyway, so she puts the baby monitor in Verity's room, continues reading the manuscript. When Jeremy gets back, he goes into the shower because he's like covered in Crew's blood. It's been a rough time for him, you know. So he goes to have a shower and she like looks up at this moment and looks to the baby monitor. And this is where Taylor, if you are listening, skip 15 seconds. She sees Verity on her fucking hands and knees in the bedroom, crawling around like the fucking exorcist. And she like cocks her fucking head when she hears Lowen scream like a fucking demon. So.
Absolutely not. Literally jump scare.
Absolutely not. Basically, Lowen's like, fuck this cunt. And she goes and tries to assault the woman who is now pretending to be partially dead again. Jeremy is like, dude, that's my soft taco wife. What are you doing? And Lowen's just like, absolutely not. I'm not having this. And shows him the manuscript. And he decides to do what Verity tried to do to their infant baby, which is choke her on her own vomit.
Wow.
Sick. Go hard or go home, right? So basically from there we jumped to the end of the book and it's 7 months later and Lowen is pregante. No one is surprised by that shocking twist.
No one's surprised.
No one. And Verity is dead, which it's about time. Crew's giving weird vibes, which, like, what's new? And Lowen is keeping tabs on how much better she is than Verity, which is fucking unsettling. And everyone in this book is fucking psychotic.
Again, she's dead, Lowen. Let it go.
But Lowen finds a letter under the floorboards of Verity's room, and it's a letter to Jeremy from Verity. So that's really comforting. Basically, the letter explains that she wrote the manuscript as a writing technique to get into the villain's perspective for her books. Shady. She says that he's already seen the manuscript and attempted to choke her previously, and then ran her into a tree with the car. So basically it's a whole thing.
Look, I'm going to say here, there's a thing called major crash investigations, and these police officers specialized in working out the circumstances leading to major crashes, believe it or not. And I feel like if you were to have a major crash where the passenger airbag coincidentally did not deploy as you were an unrestrained passenger, but coincidentally you ended up in the driver's seat, questions would be raised.
And questions would probably end up being answered.
Even still thinking that the manuscript is legit and this letter is just Verity covering her ass, I still think that it's even possible that that bit is true, that he did already know about the manuscript. He did try to end her. But even still, I still think the manuscript is also true. Like, I maintain that I think that whatever Jeremy has done has been because Verity has broken him. And that's not to excuse him doing bad things. It's just, I think that's the catalyst for it.
The only thing I don't get about that is that if he was the one to have choked her out, tried to kill her, why would he put her back in the house? Other than to make sure she doesn't talk to anyone.
He still would have tried to have killed her. And I think he probably thought she was genuinely a vegetable. So there was probably a little bit of guilt there. And then there's Crew. But either way, like, we still end up back at point one, which is the manuscript is legit.
Yeah. I don't believe a word she's saying. I think she's a fucking liar. She faked being the way that she is so that she could find money and time to take Crew because she was scared of Jeremy. It sounds something like a pathological fucking liar would say, so take that as you will. Lowen freaks and flushes the letter down the toilet, along with all logic and brain cells.
Good one, Lowen.
So now we're in the epilogue, which, if you haven't read the special edition of Verity, or you haven't looked online for the newer version that doesn't have the bonus chapter in it, this will be new to you. So this is like a little while later, Loan has given birth to her bebe, and she's still keeping track on upping Verity, which is fucking weird. Her daughter's name is Nova, and her crew and Jeremy and the bebe go to the beach for the day after moving away from the old house. And if we track back, we remember that there was a lady who ran into Jeremy and Loan at the shops, and Loan had like tampons or something, and she was really like, oh, like, who's this new lady in your life, and your wife is living in your house and she is a vegetable, so weird vibes. She sees them at this beach and Jeremy basically freaks the fuck out and he kills her. It's just a really super normal way to react to this situation.
Yeah.
Super calm. Yeah. Reaction.
And like, this whole thing is where Jeremy's like, take the baby to the car, take the kids to the car, I'm gonna just go and talk to her and I'm just gonna deal with this. And then she turns around and he's like drowning her in the ocean.
Yeah. Oh, her poor dog witnessed that. But I also think, okay, so worst case scenario, they don't kill her, right? She goes back to Vermont and she gossips that, oh my god, Jeremy has hooked up with that author that was meant to replace Verity and now they've got a baby together, so they were definitely having an affair when Verity died. It would take a lot for them to string together that they killed her, because there's no manuscript. There's no motive other than the fact that they're having an affair, but she's a vegetable. He was just like, okay, I am a man. I must man solve this problem, death. That is how his tiny, tiny man brain worked.
So we take that really normal reaction and then we basically sidestep that and go to the next part, which is Loan kind of freaking the fuck out. She's kind of like, whoa, this is a lot. But Crew is also showing some very odd behavior. He basically hates his little sister crying. So he decides that he's going to take matters into his own hands and take his small infant child of a sister and put her outside in the grass so that he doesn't have to listen to her. And I, as much as I'm sure we would all probably think about doing this sometimes, it is in fact not okay. You cannot, even if it's crying and screaming and it's annoying you, you cannot pick it up and put it outside and leave it to fend for itself.
Okay, remember he is five though. He doesn't quite have everything ticking along.
Are you saying if we look back and they say Ted Bundy, when he was five, he put a baby outside to fend for itself, you'd be like, that tracks.
It was signs, I guess, when you say it that way. However, if Charlie had put Rosie outside because she was too loud, I would have been like, look, fair, but not okay. Mummy's baby. Mummy also doesn't shut and lock my bedroom door and go have sex with my children are awake in the other room for an hour and a half. That's what was happening during this time.
I just feel like I have a 5-year-old cousin. Well, a couple years ago she was five. But, like, I just don't think she would do that. You know what I mean? I don't feel like she, in her brain, would be like, I'm going to put this child outside and it's going to be, you know, good luck, sweet little baby.
Not at five. Maybe at, like, 2 or 3 when they still are like, oh, my God, that baby is so loud.
But, yes, so Loan is basically stuck inside this house with a possible psychotic murderer husband, a PTSD-stricken child who's brainwashed by his exorcist mother to do weird shit, and a whole lot of bad luck. And that's where we end. Good luck. Yeah.
I feel like if you had finished the book without that bonus chapter, you could still be like, oh my god, poor Jeremy. And then you read that and you're like, okay, no more poor Jeremy. Jeremy is actually fucked. After reading that epilogue, that bonus chapter, that's where I got to the decision that Verity is the bad person, but her actions have basically made Jeremy a bad person as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, if you don't have the special edition, because I do not, if you just look at it up on TikTok, that people film themselves just flipping the pages of the special edition, so you can just like pause it and read each page.
Fuck it up.
Okay, well, guys, I do have a music reference for you this week, and it's Mastermind by Taylor Swift. And I used to think that this song was just like a beautiful little meet cute girl obsessing over boy overthinking kind of song. But no, now all I think of is Verity. So these are the lyrics.
I used to think about this being like Akatar, but now it's like...
Nope, let me change it for you. What if I told you none of it was accidental and the first night you saw me, nothing was going to stop me? I laid the groundwork and then just like clockwork, the dominoes cascaded in the line. What if I told you I'm a mastermind and now you're mine? It was all by design because I'm a mastermind. No one wanted to play with me as a little kid, so I've been scheming like a criminal ever since to make them love me and make it seem effortless. This is the first time I've felt the need to confess, and I swear I'm only cryptic and Machiavellian because I care. And the song ends with him discovering her plan, which kind of fits as well. So I told you none of it was accidental, and the first night you saw me, nothing was going to stop me. I laid the groundwork, and then with a wide smirk on your face, you knew the entire time. You knew that I'm a mastermind and now you're mine. Yeah, all you did was smile because I'm a mastermind. Except he didn't smile, he murdered her. But you know, it's just the same thing.
Oh, yikes. That is Verity to a fucking T.
I'm traumatized. Yeah. I wasn't able to find any fan art for this book, so there's nothing there for you. Sorry.
We're moving on with another spicy book, because why wouldn't we? You know us now. We are basically like a spicy book podcast. We're doing lots of spicy books. Fuck it up.
Yeah, you just like to make me uncomfortable. It's great.
But Ellie is going to fucking froth over this next book. We are covering Birthday Girl by Penelope Douglas. Yes, another P. Douglas book. Birthday Girl, it's age gap, ex-boyfriend's dad.
I just don't like his name. I'll get over that.
Yeah, Pike Lawson is...
He is good.
Fucking good.
You're telling me we could have an older man who has a stable income, who owns his own home, and does the dishes without being asked?
Say less. But yes, so that's what we've got to look forward to next week. And yeah, we'll see you then.
Also, be sure to let us know if you like the new format.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, if you haven't already, at A Book and a Bev Podcast. Please rate, like, and subscribe. We hear that helps. We love and appreciate you, and we'll see you next week.